This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, March 30th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll speak with longtime peace activist Medea Benjamin ahead of her scheduled visit to the Front Range. Then, Radio Nibbles host John Lindorf will be in the studio to catch us up on local food news. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. After that, we'll look at the present and future of composting in the Front Range, just ahead of big changes to composting rules set to take effect this weekend. I'll host a panel of experts, and the phone lines will be open for an hour-long call-in program. Then at 9:30, Shauna Sprouls will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines. With KGNU's John Callen.
It's going to be another month before registered families find out where they can send their children to preschool at no cost under Colorado's new Universal Preschool Program. Thousands of families have applied to the program since January and were supposed to have found out today what program they've been matched with. But the state's Department of Early Childhood has pushed back the notification date to April 26th. The Longmont Leader reports that more than 20 education and early childhood groups requested the delay, citing an algorithm problem with the online registration. The Universal Preschool Program offers 10 to 15 hours of free preschool a week to kids in the year before they start kindergarten. So far, more than 29,000 families have registered for a spot. Some 1,800 providers are taking part in the program, which begins with the 2023-24 school year. While the initial enrollment period ended last month, families can still apply at upk.colorado.gov. Air travel in the United States remains at a four-year low, but the number of people complaining about air travel service is higher than ever. KGNU's Stacey Johnson explains.
A new report by Koperk says there were nearly four times the number of consumer complaints about air travel last year compared to pre-pandemic levels in 2019. The most common complaints had were travelers not getting refunds for canceled flights and canceled or delayed flights. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser says his office has heard from countless angry passengers complaining about poor airline customer service. He said that since it's a federal responsibility, there isn't much a state attorney general can do to hold airlines accountable. Yet last summer, he led an effort by attorney generals of 38 states to get Congress to take action. Koperk says that all told, U.S. airlines canceled more than 190,000 flights last year, which is 2.7% of all scheduled flights. Koperk is the Colorado affiliate of Public Interest Research Group. For KGNU, I'm Stacey Johnson.
Investigators are looking into the cause of a fire that claimed one life in Boulder yesterday. The fire appears to have started in the basement of a house in the 2800 block of Dartmouth Avenue early Wednesday afternoon. First responders were able to extinguish the flames before they spread. Investigators haven't said whether the cause of the fire is suspicious, but the Boulder County District Attorney's Office was part of the response team. The male victim was declared dead at the scene, according to the Boulder Fire Rescue Public Information Office, and no one else was hurt. The name of the victim has not been made public. A conflict resolution group in Denver says it has concerns about the decision to place armed guards in the city's high schools in the wake of a series of shooting incidents. KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss reports.
The Conflict Center said in a press release that while there is a need for immediate action in the aftermath of these shootings, reactive measures such as having armed guards in schools fail to address the root causes of violence. They add that when it comes to school safety, the involvement and input of students is essential. After a shooting at Denver East High School left two administrators wounded last week, the Denver Public School Board unanimously agreed to place armed guards back in city high schools for the rest of the school year, beginning after this week's spring break. That school shooting happened as a student was being searched for weapons before class. The student fled the scene and after a day-long search was found dead in an apparent suicide. For KGNU, I'm Jimmy Searfoss.
A man who police say barricaded himself in a North Boulder home Monday night is scheduled to appear in court today. 47-year-old Milton Rodriguez faces multiple charges, including first-degree burglary, stalking, and violation of a protection order. Police say Rodriguez broke into the unoccupied house Monday night. The house's resident saw it on surveillance video and notified police. After police arrived at the house and he refused to come out, a shelter-in-place order was issued. He finally surrendered at 8 a.m. Tuesday. The Daily Camera reports that Rodriguez did extensive damage to the house and to police equipment. No injuries were reported. A new Major League Baseball season begins today, but even as anticipation mounts, critics say the city of Denver is targeting homeless people in the vicinity of Coors Field. The Denver Post and Denver 7 News report the city has conducted sweeps of the area to discourage homeless people from congregating. A homeless advocate says the city isn't really trying to solve a problem, but wants to make it look like they're trying to do something. The Rockies begin their season today in San Diego. They'll play their first home opener at Coors Field next week. In today's weather, mostly sunny and warm along the Front Range, with a high of 67 degrees in Denver, 61 in Boulder, and 60 degrees in Fort Collins, where there could be a thunderstorm in late afternoon. Up in Nederland, expect a high of 44 degrees. We're expecting breezy conditions, too, with a red flag warning for tomorrow. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Longtime peace activist and co-founder of the women-led peace group Code Pink, Medea Benjamin, will be in Colorado later this week and into the next. She'll be speaking at multiple events in Denver, Boulder, Fort Collins, and in Colorado Springs in the coming days. The engagements are part of a nationwide book tour and community conversations about the war in Ukraine. Medea Benjamin joins me live from Texas ahead of her trip to Colorado. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be on with you.
Well, thank you for being here. Medea Benjamin, you're currently touring the country with your latest book, War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict, which you co-authored with Nicholas Davies. As you speak about the war in Ukraine night after night to audiences in different regions, what would you say are the key points to understand about this ongoing war and the negotiations around it?
I focus really on what are we going to do about it. I certainly try to give people an understanding of the context of the war, and there are often heated discussions about that with people having very different interpretations. But in the end, I try to get us back to the issue at hand, which is how are we going to stop people from getting slaughtered every day in Ukraine? How are we going to stop this from moving into a broader World War III? And how are we going to stop it from becoming a nuclear conflict? And what are we as citizens? What is our role? What can we do to push for peace talks?
What are the big differences that you've noticed about how audiences receive your talks, depending on the locations and the contexts in which they happen? For example, you're in Texas, which I imagine the audiences may be fairly different than what you'll expect in Colorado.
Well, for example, we had a fascinating discussion yesterday where there were people who supported Ukraine and the war there and thought it was right for the U.S. to keep sending weapons. And we had people with a totally opposite position, including a man whose family was from the Donbas region, where there has been a civil war going on for 9 years. And his position was one that the Ukrainian government was destroying the homes of his family, his neighbors, his residents. So that was a very different discussion than in some other places where we've had Ukrainians who whose lives have been destroyed by the Russian invasion. So it's a very different depending on who comes. The students yesterday, for example, were very interested in learning about what were the positions of the Democrats and the Republicans in the Congress and in the White House, and talking more about the idea that this war was a stalemate, and if it continued, it would only mean more lives would be lost. So the discussions vary according to the level of understanding that people have and the positions that they're coming from. But I always try to get us back to the issue of how are we going to stop this?
Well, and you say it also depends on the understanding of people of the issues at hand. The U.S. education system doesn't necessarily teach us a whole lot about Eastern Europe. What are some of the key points that are just basic for anybody looking at this conflict to understand as part of the context that led up to it?
I think it's not only that we don't get the history, we get a one-sided one, and we don't get the context of what is the U.S. slash Western role. For example, we don't get this understanding about NATO expansion and how it was predicted that this would lead to a conflict because it was so provocative towards Russia's perceived security interests. And we don't get an understanding of how in-depth the U.S. involvement in the internal affairs of Ukraine has been, with the then Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland bragging in 2013 about the $5 billion we had spent to try to build up a civil society that was anti-Russian. Victoria Nuland and her involvement in the 2014 uprising in Ukraine, and the U.S. involvement in actually determining who would be the next leader of Ukraine, and then the West involvement in sending weapons to Ukraine starting in 2014, every single year, training the military, doing joint exercises with Ukraine, that this was very threatening to Russia. This does not justify the Russian invasion and the brutality of what they're doing today, but it gives more of a context that would lead one to different conclusions in terms of what might be the solutions.
Well, and something else that's made it more difficult to understand clearly what's going on is also there's been quite a bit of censorship of the Russian press. So we don't hear a whole lot of voices about Russian peace activists or the subtleties and nuances of the discussions going on in the ground in Russia, which is one part of this conflict. How are you able to, what do you feel is necessary for people to get a clear picture of what some of the similar discussions among peace activists happening in Russia?
Well, that's a complicated question because there is so much censorship of the press in Russia itself, and those peace activists are really running great risk, and most of them are not willing to come on to public discussions and want to hide the work they're doing, but are very much engaged in alliances with U.S. peace activists, with Ukrainian peace activists. There is very much an underground movement that is trying to also come up with solutions. You know, there are many people in Russia who are afraid that they're going to be recruited to fight in this war, and many of them have left the country or have joined in this underground movement. And the same is happening to you in Ukraine, that while there are many Ukrainians who feel that this is a fight for the existence of their nation and are willingly going into battle, there are others who do not want to do that. And there are conscientious objectors there who we are supporting as well. So yes, there is a movement, mostly underground, to support those who are looking for alternatives to fighting.
This month, of course, marks the 20th anniversary of the start of the Second Gulf War and the U.S. military occupation of Iraq. You were an outspoken figure opposing that war as well. As someone involved in peace activism in the U.S. for around 40 years now, what differences have you noticed between the anti-war movement of the past and the one in the present?
Well, in the past, there were U.S. soldiers involved heavily, for example, in Vietnam, where there was a draft, much smaller numbers being sent into the Afghanistan and Iraq, but many soldiers did go there. And so those soldiers and their family and their friends have formed the basis of a peace movement in the past. Now it's harder because well, we're glad that there are not troops, U.S. troops there, although it might come to that if we don't stop this, but also because of the direct Russian aggression, it's harder to get people to join in this peace movement. But we think it's building, and the polls are showing that more and more Americans don't want to have a blank check for weapons going to Ukraine. More and more Americans want to see negotiations. And so we are getting a bigger audience. We have a group called a coalition called peaceinukraine.org, made up of both organizations and individuals. So people who are listening that want to join can go to peaceinukraine.org. They can also sign up at codepink.org to learn more about what we're doing. And of course, I hope people will be able to come directly to some of the talks that I will be giving in Denver, in Boulder, Fort Collins, and Colorado Springs next week.
And in our final minute, I want to ask you, what do you see as a viable path forward when it does come to a peaceful resolution of this conflict?
Well, there are many countries that are putting forth ideas. China has put forth a peace proposal. The Brazilians have been calling for a peace club of nations that could get together and push all sides towards the negotiating table. The UN, the Pope, there are many avenues and many possible mediators in this. What has to happen is that all sides have to be pushed to the negotiating table. I think the Chinese are pushing the Russians towards that. And unfortunately, our government is not pushing for peace talks, nor is it pushing for Zelensky to go to the negotiating table. And that's where I think we as citizens come in to say, instead of fueling this conflict, we should be pushing for negotiations. And that's why we should be promoting the idea that our Congress people should be joining with us in that call for peace talks. So that's the way that this war will end, and better for it to end sooner than later.
Madea Benjamin is a longtime peace activist and co-founder of Code Pink. She'll be at the Highlands United Methodist Church in Denver this Saturday afternoon and at Boulder's Unity Church this Sunday at 2 p.m. as part of the Colorado leg of her book tour. We'll have more information on the dates and times at news.kgnu.org. Madea Benjamin, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on. I look forward to being in Colorado.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Up next is Radio Nibbles. Good morning. It's time for Radio Nibbles with John Lindorf. He's bringing the sunshine and some good food news. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Shannon. And seems like this morning we need a little sunshine around the gigantic KGNU breakfast buffet table. It's a little foggy out there, folks, but spring is definitely coming. And, you know, after the chill, I thought I'd dwell on warm thoughts today. Because spring is coming, and baseball too, which for those who care, it's a big deal.
Well, also the farmers market is coming. That's another big deal.
That's right. The Boulder Farmers Market and the Longmont Farmers Market open Saturday for the season. I'm sure everyone's aware that it will be nuts. You know, tons of strollers and people and stuff. My advice is
all the cabin fever of people wanting to get out into the warm air.
Right. Get there early, and there's a ton of new vendors. And the Wednesday night farmers market opens on May 3rd. The other thing is the Cure Farm stand is open this weekend, along with the Black Cat Farm and also Olin Farms for early spring activities. There's not a lot of fresh produce this time of year, but it's coming. And there's a big seat swap for gardeners at the main library tonight, so look into that. And so here's I'm going to give you reasons over the coming weeks about why you should grow a garden, like mine on my patio or whatever. California has been just totally messed up in terms of rain and snow, and they haven't been able to plant. Farm workers are really suffering out there because they can't work. And there's just going to be shortages and price hikes of a lot of vegetables and fruits this year because of that. So plant something. If you want to find out what to plant, my column today is all about Boulder's, the opening of Boulder's first traditional seed house since the 1950s. The Massa Farm Seed House is open. You can find out more about that by reading Nibbles in the Boulder Weekly.
Well, I want to ask you, John, as somebody who is an experienced patio gardener, what are the things that are easiest to grow on a patio or maybe even inside of a kitchen with some light?
Well, herbs, mm-hmm. for one, because they regenerate themselves. Peppers are surprisingly easy, and they grow well indoors or on patios. There's a bunch of flowers, and the reason that the seed house is important is because these are seeds that were rigorous. They were chosen. They were grown here. They're adapted for the climate here, so they have varieties that do well. But those are the biggies.
Okay. Well, what about food news? What do you have for me?
Well, the empty storefronts are gradually filling in. Postino Wine Cafe has opened on the end of the mall, across from Illegal Pete's. That was formerly Casa, which was a Japanese grill. And some folks may remember that when that building first opened, there was a restaurant in there called 15 Degrees with Chef James Mazzio. And it was one of the first big award-winning restaurants in Boulder. It's kind of gotten forgotten through the ages. And we were sad to hear that the Front Range Brewing Company in Lafayette had closed. It never quite recovered from the pandemic, and it was a great place for food and music and beer.
Well, speaking of great drinks and food, I know that you wanted to follow up on the invitation to the Ozo Coffee and Hinman Pie Tasting.
Yes, this is a wonderful event, and it's April 8th. There's two sessions at 10 and 1 at Ozo Coffee in Boulder. And what we had in mind was a wonderful pie and coffee pairing tasting and learning experience. What we're going to do is John Hinman is bringing five different pies, some sweet, some savory. Those are being paired by one of the great experts at Ozo Coffee right now, and they're going to be picking coffees to go with it. And we'll taste those. You'll be able to find out how to brew better coffee and how to bake better pies, and it'll just be a great time. I'm really looking forward to it.
And how can people get in on that?
They can call KGNU and 303-449-4885.
That's, yes.
And ask for a ticket. Can I mention how much it is or not?
It's for KGNU, so yes, you can.
It's $75 a person, and it is two people for $120. And it's really going to be a wonderful thing. All the proceeds go to KGNU, and we're incredibly grateful to Hinman Pie and Ozo Coffee
for
supporting us all through the years.
Yes, this is a fundraiser for KGNU, and you get to fill your belly at the same time and have some great company with John Lindorf. I get to see him every week, so trust me, he's a wonderful person to hang out with and to speak about food with. So that would be also maybe email membership@kgnu.org if you want to put it in writing, or 303-449-4885 and ask for Verity.
Right, and pick the session that you like the best.
Okay, well, we're coming up on that time where I ask you, what's the best thing you've had to eat lately?
Well, baseball's coming. So a few weeks back, because I was writing an article, I visited, there's a big development right next to Coors Field. It's called McGregor Square. And there is just this, it's a public place, and there's this humongous video screen that shows all of the games next door at Coors Field. There's a wonderful food court in there, and I had a birria empanada. With salsa. I had Japanese fried chicken. It's just really neat food in there in McGregor Square.
I'm going to take this opportunity to tell you about the best thing I've eaten lately, too. It was also in Denver. I went to the Feria de Pozole at, it's at Cultura Chocolate, which is in Westwood. They had a whole, they invited multiple chefs in there, and I was so excited that there were two chefs from Oaxaca. Yeah. And
At Cultura.
Yes.
Yes, isn't that a neat building?
Oh,
and
wonderful.
And a wonderful and a great neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love it. Anyway, finally, after two long years in this area, finally, I have found a place where I can find tlayudas. And it is called La Reina del Sur of Denver. So La Reina Denver is their Instagram handle. The chef is from Tlaxiaco.
And you better explain what that dish is.
Oh, a tlayuda is, it's actually an endemic corn variety from Oaxaca. So it's like a giant tortilla, but it's a crispy one. So sometimes they describe it as like an open-faced pizza. But yeah, I mean, it's basically like it's a tlayuda. It's right. Anyway, it's made with like a crispy type of corn, like a giant tortilla, and you put, you know, you fill it with your vegetables and your salsas, of course. And there is a food truck that on Sundays only, in the parking lot of Cultura Chocolate in Westwood, he is there from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. So that's on my calendar for this weekend.
It's really worth going down.
Yes, yes. Well, John, that's all the time we have for today. So, you know, thank you for, as always, for bringing Radio Nibbles to the airwaves.
Join us for pie and coffee, and also join us for Kitchen Table Talk next week with Chef Dan Asher.
Well, that is all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for a deep dive into composting. We'll be taking your calls and your questions. That's coming up after the BBC News headlines.